This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. Our nation takes a generation of young men and women, shapes them into warriors, sends them across the planet to fight and experience horrible things, and then brings them back into the suburbs and expects them to function perfectly fine. But there is a fallout to war, and there's nothing casual about being a casualty. These are some of the topics explored in a collection of short stories about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan called Redeployment. The author is a Marine veteran who served in Iraq, Phil Cly. Welcome to The Source, Phil.
Thank you for having me.
Your book is getting some amazing reviews and critical praise. It's just off the charts. Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much. It's been amazing, the response that I've gotten so far.
So first, I just want to say that you pronounce your name Cly, but it's spelled Clay, K-L-A-Y, yeah. For anyone who wants to Google you and look you up on Amazon and check you out there, right?
Yep.
Okay,
it's
so
German name.
German name, German pronunciation. We got that down here in Texas as well. So you joined with the Marines. Why did you do that? When did that happen?
I joined while I was in college, or started the process while I was in college. It was in the lead-up to the Iraq War. I wanted to do my part. There'd always been a great respect for public service in my family, though neither of my parents joined the military. But I'm one of five boys, and of the five of us, three of us ended up in the military. One older brother was a Marine, one younger brother who was Army, who is actually in the Army Reserve now. And, wanted to serve my country. I was, hopeful that I could, put myself in a position where I'd have responsibility and the ability to affect things for the better. And I like the ethos of the Marine Corps.
So you go to Iraq and you serve as a public affairs officer?
Yes. So I was a staff officer at a group of Marines who worked for me, combat correspondents. If you've ever seen the movie Full Metal Jacket, the Joker character, that's his job. And it's sort of an interesting job in that it sent me around. I traveled a lot around Anbar province while I was there and ended up hanging out and spending time with a lot of different types of Marines and soldiers and sailors.
Do you think that when you tell people that you're a public affairs officer, do they think you had an easy deployment?
I mean, I compared to a lot of guys, I did have an easy deployment. I certainly was not kicking down doors or anything like that. Sure.
And so what I know that when sometimes the veterans of these wars will look at each other and we'll talk about things, and is that part of the conversation?
Yeah, of course. I mean, everybody has their different experiences. One of the things I have two friends named Matt. They both served in scout cavalry units. They both served in the same towns. They both worked with the same translator. But one of the Matts was there in 2006, one of them was there in 2008, and they couldn't have had maybe more different deployments. I mean, their stories about their time are so different. And, that's everybody. It's this huge collective effort that was going on, and, each person had their own kind of small piece of that.
So you write the book, Redeployment, a collection of short stories. They are amazing. Some of them are funny, and some of them just blow your mind, that you avoid the cliches that we may think about when we hear about wartime writing. But I think this certainly, as many of the critics have pointed out, that this definitely belongs in the catalog of great wartime books. What were your expectations? What were your impressions about war when you were signing up and when you were in college? And then how was that informed as you went along? And do you look back on those impressions that you had as being naive or even silly?
Well, the process of joining the military and then going overseas, and then, the process of writing this book and talking to a lot of other veterans, and reading a lot more about this, your notion of what war is, it just becomes more complicated. I think that, sure, when I was joining up, I had kind of vague, abstract notions about war. And one of the things I think, people find coming back is because there's so few people who served, you come back and when you interact with civilians, sometimes they'll have, you know, those same ideas about war that you used to believe in, and they'll think that that was your experience when in fact it was something very different. But yeah, it just got progressively more and more complicated, and that was what I was interested in when I was writing the book, was trying to get kind of break down these different experiences and the different ways that people, you know, reacted to the jobs that they did and the decisions that they made, and then what it was like coming home.
You give us a very much of an insider point of view. I mean, I did not serve, and I was certainly not in Iraq or Afghanistan. I'm dependent upon your storytelling to bring me inside, and I certainly feel like I was able to get a glimpse through the stories that you tell. So do you feel – how much responsibility do you feel when you write these stories, not just for your fellow combatants, the people that you served with, but also to the public?
A tremendous responsibility. You know, I think every story was this kind of painful, hard, long, slow process that involved, you know, a lot of research, a lot of you know, a lot of work. I had a lot of readers who I'd give the work to, who'd, you know, give me feedback on it, and I'd have, you know, veterans read it and civilians read it, because I felt like, you know, when we as Americans send people to war, I think that it's really important for us to engage with what that means on a human level, right? And I felt that, you know, I had a responsibility to fellow service members to talk about those experiences honestly, right? Not, you know, not always 100% positive or super negative, but just, you know, as rigorously as I possibly could, and to communicate that, because I think these things are really important, and I felt an obligation while writing it to kind of set my own ego aside and try and get the best and most sort of rigorously honest book that I could, even if that meant sort of undermining some of the things that I used to maybe believe.
Yet this is a work of fiction. This is fiction.
Yep, absolutely.
And that's
but you know, that's the beautiful thing about fiction, right? Is that, you know, you read something, and you can, you know, the reader is imagining themselves into the heads of these other characters. You know, it's not just, you're not just kind of looking at events from afar. It's about you know, people putting themselves in the heads of people who have experiences that are very, very much unlike theirs.
All right, we're taking a quick break. We're speaking with the author Phil Klei. He is the author of Redeployment, a collection of short stories about the war in Afghanistan and Iraq and the impact it has on the people who fight those wars, what happens when they come home, and some of the tough moral choices that they made while they're in serving, and how they have to live with those choices later on. We want your phone calls if you want to ask a question or make a comment about if you served in a war. We certainly want to hear from you. 614-8980. When we come back from the break, Phil, can you do a reading for us? Read something for us.
Absolutely.
Okay, stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies, joined by Phil Klei. He is the author of Redeployment, a collection of short stories about life in the war zone in Iraq and Afghanistan. Phil, can you read something for us?
Sure. So this is from the title story, and the narrator is was in the Second Battle of Fallujah, and he's just gotten back home. So here's an experience. Your wife takes you shopping in Wilmington. Last time you walked down a city street, your Marine on point went down the side of the road, checking ahead and scanning the roofs across from him. The Marine behind him checks the windows on the top levels of the buildings. The Marine behind him gets the windows a little lower, and so on down until your guys have the street level covered, and the Marine in back has the rear. In a city, there's a million places they can kill you from. It freaks you out at first, but you go through like you were trained, and it works. In Wilmington, you don't have a squad. You don't have a battle buddy. You don't even have a weapon. You startle 10 times checking for it, and it's not there. You're safe, so your alertness should be at white, but it's not. Instead, you're stuck in an American Eagle Outfitters. your wife gives you some clothes to try on, and you walk into the tiny dressing room. You close the door, and you don't want to open it again. Outside, there are people walking around by the windows like it's no big deal. People have no idea where Fallujah is, where three members of your platoon died. People who've spent their whole lives at White. We'll never get even close to Orange. You can't. Until the first time you're in a firefight, or the first time an IED goes off that you missed, and you realize that everybody's life, everybody's, depends on you not messing up. And you depend on them. Some guys go straight to Red. They stay like that for a while, and then they crash, go down past White, down to whatever is lower than, I don't care if I die. Most everybody else stays Orange all the time. Here's what Orange is. You don't see or hear like you used to. Your brain chemistry changes. You take in every piece of the environment, everything. I could spot a dime in the street 20 yards away. I had an antenna out that stretched down the block. It's hard to even remember exactly what that felt like. I think you take in too much information to store, so you just forget, free up brain space to take in everything about the next moment that might keep you alive. And then you forget that moment, too, and focus on the next, and the next, and the next, for 7 months. So that's Orange. And then you go shopping in Wilmington, unarmed. And you think you can get back down to White? It'll be a long freaking time before you get down to White.
All right. Phil Cly, he's the author of Redeployment, reading from a segment of the book, the title short story. And I guess I should say in that short story, it's the first line about dogs. What's the first?
Yes.
The first line is, we shot dogs.
Yes.
And we were with this character in the story as he comes home and he has to deal with his own dog, and he ends up having to shoot him also.
Well, the first line is about, in the second, in that battle, sort of intense or warfare, and there were stray dogs that had been eating corpses. And so some of the Marines had shot the dogs to stop them from doing that, which is, upsetting. And the narrator is a dog person.
And they call that Operation Scooby.
Operation Scooby.
And that actually happened.
That's a real thing. I mean, it was not an official operation, but that's what some guys called it. Yeah.
So when I read the story, and then you wonder, okay, there's the surface level of the story, and then there's the subtext and what's the talk going on. It's like, what does a dog mean? And at the very end of the story, when he shoots his own dog, you're wondering, okay, has he crossed a threshold that he can now get to White somehow, or is he still locked in Orange, possibly Red?
You know, it's different readers have their own kind of take, and I think that he's gone through a hard experience, right? And for me, what he ends up doing at the end is very complicated, and his wife is very much trying to be engaged with him and there for him, and he also knows that he's back home. He's got an old ailing dog who needs to be put down, and he doesn't want to let anybody else do that for him. Right? He's not the sort of person who's going to let he doesn't want his wife to take the dog to the vet.
So it has the echoes of Mice and Men in there.
Yeah. So. It's a very different act, that he does at the end, and I wanted there to be that question of what it means. There's a great bit in Carl Marlantes, right? Has a bit in What It's Like to Go to War, where he says, if you ask somebody who's just back from war, like a 21-year-old. What did it feel like to kill somebody? And they might angrily reply, like, didn't feel like a thing, right? But if you ask that same kid, 20 years later, they'll give you a very different answer, and it'll be a very different answer depending on, you know, who was around you, what kind of family and friends you had, how you ended up processing those memories and those experiences that you had. And so, that story is very much kind of in the moment as he's just back home and dealing with the weirdness and the complexity of being back in America after having been in the combat zone.
We had one comment online from Blake. He says, fiction often gets to the truth better than being burdened with other actual events. Did you find that to be true?
I absolutely found that to be true. You know, there's a great British novelist, Anthony Powell, who once said something along the lines of, and I'm going to mangle the quote, but it's, you know, people assume that because fiction is invented, it's not true. And in fact, the opposite is the case, right? That, you know, with fiction, you take the things that you're thinking about or just the questions and doubts and experiences that you want to really explore, and you can put them under pressure and really kind of dig underneath them. I mean, I think we all, you know.
Sure. Like Picasso once said that a mask is a lie that tells the truth.
Exactly.
So this is as fiction. Did anyone ever tell you, Phil, you might sell more books if it was a memoir?
Well, you know, there are 12 different narrators ranging from foreign service officers and chaplains and artillerymen to comptrollers. I would have had to have had a very interesting life.
Well, you know what I mean. They could have told you to put all this together and make it look like a memoir or somehow.
And you know, I mean, and I think there's some really excellent memoirs out there about these wars. Adrian Bonenberger's Afghan Post is really good. Jessica Goodell's Shade of Black. But you know, for me, I think that this was the best way that I knew to deal with the sort of subjects that were vital to me.
So how therapeutic was this for you?
I mean, I don't think it wasn't a matter of therapy. Writing some of these stories made me angry. You know, writing some of these stories upset me. I don't know whether it was. I mean, and writing can be therapeutic, and that's great. But I think that, you know, for me, these were subjects that were really important to me, and this is the best way to think about them. This is the best way to express them, and then hopefully have other readers engage with them, and have their own ideas.
Well, obviously, we're dealing with the crisis of many men and women coming back from serving, and they're dealing with PTSD, and we have this terrible situation with suicides and. They're telling talk about these things. Get your experiences out. Can you process that?
You know, I think it's important. There's a weird kind of way in which when we talk about veterans, there's like these two poles of either the superhero, Navy SEAL badass, or for like traumatized, passive victim, and that's not really the case, I think, for most people. And somebody can have gone through hard experiences that really, were very painful for them, but that can actually make them sort of a stronger person in some ways, and maybe even a better citizen when they come back home. They can feel proud of their service, but also really conflicted about how ugly some of the things that they saw were. And I think that that's exactly what I wanted to, kind of get at in the book and to put you in those kind of difficult and conflicted emotional states.
And what are you hearing from other men and women who served? What's their reaction to the book?
So far, the reactions have been very, very positive. Which has been, really, really gratifying to me. I think that, I think that most service members, I think they want people to be engaged with these experiences, right? And the variety of them, and with what the wars have meant and continue to mean. And so I think that, a lot of veterans are, at least as I've expressed to me, you know, are happy that I'm, you know, I'm...
Are there some things that said, well, Phil, that was great, but you didn't have to tell them everything?
I mean, I think that you don't, you know, you don't respect somebody by pretending that their experience was something that it wasn't. You know, you respect somebody by talking about, you know, talking about something like Iraq in all of its ugliness, right? As well as, you know, the better parts. Because if you're not, you're just being patronizing.
So there's no real judgmentalness about the war itself, whether the war and the action and we went in there and did all this was good or bad, but you just sort of tell the story of what it was like to be in the middle of it. But is that the elephant in the room? Why can't we talk about whether or not this was, this was not a good decision or not?
Well, there are some things in the book. I mean, for example, the story from the perspective of foreign service officer is very much about the, his attempts to contribute to Iraqi reconstruction in the aftermath of a lot of the policies that were made. And I think that, you know, there's, it's not, you know, there's not just.
That's going to take some time to get to.
Or not, but all of the decisions that were made and all of the consequences.
So maybe it's still too fresh. We're still there. We're still we're not ready to have that discussion yet. Probably as a society, we're still processing a lot. And thank you for your book, Phil. It's a gritty telling, brings us inside, and it's, I think, well needed. And I think it does definitely join the canon of great wartime writing. Phil Klei, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about junk science in the courtroom. This is The Source on KSTX. Stay tuned.